Thank you. Welcome to today's press call to discuss the NCAA Division I Committee on Infractions decision regarding St. Mary's College of California. As members of the media, you should have received a link to both the press release and the public report, which contains the details of this case. This information can also be found at ncaa.org. The Committee on Infractions is an independent group comprised of representatives across NCAA membership and the public. Committee on Infractions Chair Britton Banowski will now discuss the findings and decisions of the Infractions Committee, and following his opening comments, Committee on Infractions member Greg Sankey and Britton Banowski will take questions. Britton?
Thank you, Stacey, and good morning, everyone. As Stacey said earlier, and I think it's worth repeating, the committee is an independent body. We have nothing to do with the investigation of cases or the presentation of cases. We are simply responsible for hearing the cases, making findings, and determining penalties. You should all have access to our report, which details the findings and the penalties in the case. I know some of you may have only gotten the report a few minutes ago or a short time ago. I would encourage you to read it carefully, however, and it's important to do that if you really want to have a full understanding of the case. At the outset of my comments, I'd like to express some appreciation for the very high level of cooperation we received from Brother Gallagher and St. Mary's College, as well as from representatives from the West Coast Conference. Regarding the findings, with limited exception, the institution and the head coach agreed with the allegations in the case. It's important to note that the vast majority of the violations in this case, which are serious, involved the conduct of an assistant men's basketball coach who's no longer employed by the institution. The committee found that the head men's basketball coach failed to monitor and failed to promote an atmosphere for compliance. Additionally, the men's basketball team received impermissible training and coaching sessions from trainers not employed by the school. The committee found that the former assistant coach knowingly committed violations during the recruitment of three prospects, which resulted in an unethical conduct finding. The majority of the recruiting activity by the former assistant coach centered on international prospects and included impermissible travel, local transportation, and the arrangement of host family accommodations. He also attempted to assist an international prospect by providing personal financial information as part of the prospect's efforts in obtaining a student visa. The impermissible activity occurred both while the former assistant coach was employed by the college and as a representative of the institution's athletics interests after he was no longer employed by the college. During the recruitment of the international prospects, the head coach failed to monitor the activities of the former assistant coach. The head coach was aware of the former assistant coach's previous employment with a professional sports agency and his termination from a two-year college due to improprieties. The head coach was also aware of the former assistant coach's recruiting activity with the international prospect for whom the former assistant coach arranged travel to the United States and lodging with a local family. The institution was put on notice by the California Interscholastic Federation, the body governing high school athletics, that there were serious issues with the prospect. These were all red flags and should have alerted the institution and the head coach for the need to monitor and provide greater oversight with regard to the former assistant coach's recruiting activity. Additionally, the head coach knew that impermissible conditioning and practice sessions were conducted by two individuals not employed by the college, resulting in failure to monitor and promote an atmosphere for compliance. Now, with respect to penalties, the full list of penalties can be found in the public report. They include public reprimand and censure, 4 years probation through February 28, 2017, a five-game suspension for the head coach during the 2013-14 season, elimination of off-campus recruiting for the head coach during the 2013-14 academic year, a two-year show cause order for the former assistant coach, a reduction of men's basketball scholarships from 13 to 11 for the 2014-15 and 2015-16 seasons, no foreign tours by the men's basketball team until the start of the 2017-18 season. No participation in multi-team events until the 2015-16 season. and no skill instruction during the 2013-14 and 2014-15 seasons. Those are the findings of the committee and the penalties that are built into the report. And Stacy, that concludes my opening remarks. So back to you and to Greg.
Thank you. Lois, can you please explain how reporters can indicate they would like to ask a question?
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone indicating that you've been placed into queue, and you may remove yourself from queue at any time by pressing the pound key. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, if you have a question or a comment, please press star then one at this time. And one moment for our first question. And if you do have a question or a comment, please press star then one at this time. We do have a question from John Wilner from San Jose Mercury News. Please go ahead.
Hi, Britton. I was wondering if you could kind of relate what the head coach's response was, just the general tenor of his response after you guys presented the information to him on the violations.
Greg, you want to take that?
Yeah, I think the report shares some of that perspective, John. You can walk through specific areas, potentially in the findings of failure to promote the atmosphere of compliance, which begins on page 22, or even backing up a footnote at the bottom of page 7. I think overall, the committee has the opportunity to visit with the coach, the head coach, during the hearing, and he was candid and responsive and fully responsive to the committee's questions during the hearing.
Remorseful? Any further light you could shed on that?
Well, I don't think that the committee's role is to necessarily evaluate that aspect. In my experience, anyone that is a part of that process certainly does not want to be there, maybe at that time, and generally speaking, take action to avoid a repeat appearance in the future. And I think that's an understanding that was present in this matter as well.
Thank you. Next question.
Next question is from Andy Tetz from ESPN. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Sorry, I just jumped on. One quick factual thing before I ask my question. Was the hearing on December 8th or 15th?
The hearing was December 14th.
14th. Okay, thank you.
That's right in the first line of that introduction, Andy.
Okay, sorry, because I was just hopping on. Thank you.
Okay.
Here's my question. The unique penalty at the end about the no skill instruction, to interpret that, I just want to make sure, is that like the individual workouts that players can do? And if that is the case, how much does that then hurt or is it punitive toward the players and their development rather than really hitting the coaches and the university? Are you hitting more in that penalty the actual players that are coming forward in the next two seasons and inhibiting their ability to develop?
The reality is through the year, the student athletes, both certainly in the future, have the opportunity to be developed, and they can do that individually regardless of this penalty, just not as part of the bylaw allowing certain aspects of skill instruction. So it does have an inhibition going forward, but it doesn't limit players on their own who are seeking to develop their game the appropriate through the appropriate channels or opportunities.
Does that mean just with no coaches there?
Because the exception that allows that relates to having coaches involved.
Thank you. Next question.
Question is a follow-up from John Wilner. Please go ahead.
Hi, and sorry if this is in there. I haven't had a chance to go through everything, but could you explain how you got to the 5-game suspension as opposed to 1, 3, 10, whatever other number you want to throw out there?
Well, that's part of the committee's deliberations, and the committee's going to look carefully at the underlying violations in this matter, which, as Britton noted, center on the recruiting activities of the former assistant coach. The bylaw cited for the expectation of the head coach to set an atmosphere for compliance and monitor the activities of his staff, bylaw 11121. is an important factor in contributing to that. And through the committee's deliberations, the actions of that assistant coach were significant. Therefore, a significant penalty attached to conference games was established. I'd also note that part of this was the out-of-season activities, which was also cited in that failure to monitor on the part of the coach, the head coach.
Thank you.
And we have a follow-up from Andy Tetz. Please go ahead.
Yeah, on the no foreign tours and the no exempted tournaments going forward for the next couple seasons, were you guys privy to whether or not they had one scheduled? Did they offer that kind of information that now obviously they cannot go on or play in?
Yeah, you're testing my memory, Andy. We looked, I believe we did look at that information. What's important in evaluating the particular penalties is the length of the ban on foreign tours causes a team to miss one cycle would normally have in a once-in-four circumstance, and the permissive nature or the opportunity to play in those multi-team events was restricted as an appropriate scheduling penalty.
Yeah, and I would add, I mean, to the extent they have existing commitments, we're not suggesting they can't fulfill their existing commitments. I'd look to the staff to help me with that issue.
Is the staff on the call?
Should be.
We are, and we can follow up with you, Andy.
Yeah, I think, Andy, there's a provision in here that you know, we don't want them not to follow through on any existing obligations that they have. It may push the penalty back, but I think they have the opportunity to fulfill their commitments.
And the last, if I could follow up, was there any talk about instituting any kind of moratorium on any international recruiting as another way to hit them?
There's a lot of things that get discussed, but part of the challenge or opportunity for the institution is to address the shortcomings to avoid these types of problems in the future, and I think our perspective is that they're prepared to do that moving forward.
And the last thing, and I appreciate your time, was there ever any, and forgive me if this was asked at the beginning of the call, was there ever any talk of a postseason ban either this year or the year after?
So there's, again, a lot of issues discussed, but what's important for the purpose of this report is what's actually presented. And so there was not a postseason ban imposed. Instead, the two that you cited earlier were adopted by the committee as penalties.
Thanks, Andy. Next question.
Question is from Jeff Rado from the Oakland Tribune. Please go ahead.
Can either of you address whether or not the college has indicated it will accept the penalties, or does it plan an appeal? Have they indicated that to you?
That's not something that is typically indicated to the committee. The college has certain rights and the opportunity to do that, and that's a decision have to determine the outcome regarding.
I would add that that's just simply outside the scope of what we do. I mean, as I said earlier, I mean, our jobs are simply to hear the arguments, review the evidence that's appropriately before us, and then decide whether violations occurred and what the penalties should be. If a school or a party wants to appeal, they can. And, you know, that's just simply the way the procedures work.
And our next question is from George Schroeder from USA Today. Please go ahead.
Yeah, this one is for both of you guys, but I'm wondering, as you went through the case, do you find the idea or the practice of international recruiting, maybe does it lead to particular pitfalls or provide for more, you know, the opportunity for more a relaxed compliance atmosphere? I mean, is there something that's unique to international recruiting that you guys maybe would warn about?
George, I think you've probably been at this a while, so we've got plenty of cases that involve both domestic and international recruiting. So there are opportunities for problems on both fronts, and I don't know that I'd attempt to quantify one over the other, although any case, certainly this one, raises the attention of needing to be attentive to who's involved in that process and the oversight.
I'd add that there are a number of cases that have dealt with international prospective student athletes, international students, and there, you know, we've said before that there's kind of a heightened responsibility when you're recruiting international students to ensure that the proper level of oversight's in place. So I'm sure we can, if you call Stacy, we can refer you to some of those other cases.
Thank you.
And at this time, there are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining us today. This concludes our comments, and a recording of this call will be available in the near future on our website at nca.org.